Listen up, people. That's right. It's time to listen to the sparks of bliss in your life. I'm your host and life coach, Caroline De Posada from Miami, Florida. And this podcast is an invitation to join me in upgrading our mindset, wellness, and relationships so that together we create a life that unlocks our bliss. Join me each week as we explore practical strategies, inspiring stories, and the moments of clarity, or as we like to call them, los momenticos, that make the world a little more magical. Consider this your weekly dose of wisdom in your pocket. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hey, listeners, welcome to episode number 40 of Blissin' Up. So we are officially in the last month of February, the shortest month of the year, and often referred to as the month of love because it is the month we celebrate Valentine's Day. But for purposes of this podcast and this work that I do, we have themed February Foundation February. So if you listen to last week's podcast episode, episode number 39, you'll hear all about why I themed February Foundation February. And although you have the choice to theme the month whatever serves you best, you can choose whatever theme is most appropriate for you this month, you can always borrow mine and adopt it as your own. And together, we can work through the month in establishing a deep foundation. Maybe this is the month that you want to set up a deep foundation of love in your marriage or with your children or in some of your relationships. Maybe this is the month you want to focus on your mindset, on your wellness, and really set some foundational practices there. Maybe this is the month you want to go back to the rituals and the daily habits and the foundational frameworks that support your best life. Maybe this is the month to focus on the foundation of your business, of your work, you know, whatever it is for you. I hope it serves you, and I hope that you are very intentional in the practice of it. So I was thinking about what I wanted to talk to you today, and what came to me was creating or setting up a foundation for a blissful life. I've thought a lot about this because when I began the conversation about living a blissful life, when I started teaching on how to listen for the sparks of bliss in your life, I've had many conversations with people and I've gotten some pushback on this idea of bliss. And what people have told me is that bliss can be, or the idea of bliss can be unrelatable and feel unattainable because it's just too big, right? It's like, it's too big of an emotion. It's too much happiness. It's too far from reach. And people have told me, you know, it's easier to teach something more attainable, like finding joy, like just, you know, simple joy in life, like focus on the simple things. But bliss, that's just unrealistic. But the reality is that it's not true. Bliss is not too big. It's not unattainable. It's not unrealistic. What it is it's expansive. It elevates you. It is the kind of language that changes your experience from a mediocre one to an experience of greatness. And that's truly what I want for you in your life. I want you to find the bliss within you. I want you to live an extraordinary, blissful experience that at the end of your life, you feel like, wow, this was an amazing ride. It was an amazing journey, and it was well worth it. So the first element of setting a foundation of a blissful life is simply adopting the language. Now, when this concept really clicked for me in my brain was when I heard Marissa Peer talk about the power of language and how it affects our subconscious mind a few years ago at the Summit of Greatness. Up until that point, I had heard about affirmations and things like that, but to be honest with you, I really found them to be kind of woo-woo. I didn't really understand the science behind it. I couldn't connect with the concept of affirmations or anything like that. But Marissa Peer was speaking at this event, and she was talking about the power of affirmations, which is, you know, using language to direct your subconscious mind. And she said something that got me to lean in and pay attention. She said, "We think that just because our brains are complicated, the solutions have to be complicated too. But the solutions can actually be quite simple." And then she explained what happens when you use an affirmation, what happens to your subconscious brain. She explained that the subconscious brain doesn't identify between true and false, and therefore it just obeys you. And she gave me a context that influenced me enough to say, okay, I'm going to try this. And I ended up, you know, researching her more and watching more of her videos and kind of like learning more about her, because I was very intrigued by her teachings. And what I found in like doing a little deeper dive into her work was that she, not only does she endorse affirmations, but she endorses using dramatic language to enhance the brain's experience. So for example, she would say something like, you know, you don't want to give your brain mediocre language, like, oh, that was nice. You know, that was a nice movie, or I'm a decent speaker. You know, I think I can have a good time at the event, right? She talks about how you want to excite your brain. You want to excite your subconscious and activate it. And you do that by using colorful and exciting language. So she'll replace nice and, you know, this is okay and good and whatever with, that was a delicious dinner. That movie was hysterical. I had an amazing time. This is such a powerful concept. You know, I'm a phenomenal coper, you know, and using language to expand your capacity, expand your brain, instead of using language to shut it down, to limit you, to restrict you. And I really, really leaned into that. And I started to use it in my own life. And what I noticed was that there was a little part of me that had already done that. In fact, when I was younger, I remember whenever I went to parties and I just went out, you know, I just loved going out. I loved being social. I've always been kind of a happy person. So I would, whenever somebody would ask me like, oh, how was your night? I would always say, oh, I had the best time. I just had the best time. And the joke around me, you know, amongst my friends, was that Caro could have the best time in a cardboard box, because they said no matter where you put her, no matter where you stick her, she always has the best time. Up until I heard Marissa Peer say that, I really thought that saying I had the best time was just the experience I had, and it had to be true to my experience. Like, I didn't connect. I didn't think that my saying I had the best time influenced the next time that I was going to have. I just thought I did have the best time. It's true. Like, I'm just speaking facts. I did have the best time, and that was it. But I noticed after listening to Marissa Peer that I was intuitively expanding my experience whenever I went out, and I was training my brain to have the best time, to look for the exciting experiences. And when I had the science behind it, I could do it with more intention. But there's even a greater power of language when it comes to naming your emotions. So it's been said that people who can identify their emotions also cope with those emotions better. And the reasoning behind it is that your brain cannot deal with something if it doesn't know what it is. That is why acknowledging and accepting things is so important, but even more so, naming things is important. You know, there's always debate about whether you should label someone or diagnose someone or name something. And naming is just one of those things that our brains use to categorize, to identify, to relate to something, because otherwise we don't understand how to conceptualize certain things. So we give it names. And emotions is a big one. We need to name our emotions to be able to understand them. Now, when I was doing research on this, and this was a long time ago when I really started to get into affirmations, I discovered that most of us know certain generic emotions based on where we live, our culture, our experiences, our language, etc. Oh my God. So I have a dear friend of mine who listens to my podcast, and she always corrects me when I say et cetera, because I say it wrong. So I want to make sure I just said et cetera. I want to make sure that I said it right. Mindy, I'm saying it right. Et cetera. Okay, back to the program. So the point of all of this is that there is incredible power in the language we choose to speak into the world, whether we are describing an experience or whether we are describing an emotion. And I saw this play out in my own personal life when I discovered the word bliss. Okay, so let me explain to you what happened to me. I think I've explained this in a previous podcast, so maybe you've heard this before, and if you have, bear with me. I'm gonna make it short, but I think it's an important thing. I was sitting in a lake house with my family. We were remodeling our home. I was sitting, there was a sunset. The sunset was in front of me over the water. My kids were sitting on the edge of the dock. And I was looking out, and I experienced a sensation that in that moment, I knew was bliss. I just knew that it was. And the word bliss came to me in that moment. And it was like, oh, this is a spark of bliss. Now, the reason I think I felt that was because in that moment, I witnessed a full circle experience. I was sitting on the dock overlooking a sunset in this lake house that we had rented, and my three kids were in front of me, and my marriage was strong, and we were remodeling our home, and we were just in a really good place. And it took a lot of effort and discipline and choices and overcoming obstacles and tapping into our resilience and emotional intelligence. Like, it took so much for us to get to that moment that I connected the dots. I witnessed that full circle experience, and I felt it. I felt that spark of bliss. And that could have just passed me by and it would have been over, but as luck would have it, the very next day, I'm sitting in front of my computer, I'm brainstorming over some topics I want to share with my community, and I have my journal opened, and when I look down, I see the words, "Follow your bliss." And it was a moment of synchronicity, and I felt connected to that word, to that emotion. And I just knew that there was something there for me. So I decided to follow that bliss. But when I started the journey, I started it just by asking questions. So for example, I was in the car one day, and my three boys were in the car with me and my husband. And I asked my family, how do you define bliss? Like, what do you think of when you think of the word bliss? Because people were not using that word at the time that this word came to me. I didn't, up until that moment, my reticular activating system had not caught on to that word. So I asked my family and they really pondered about it for a little bit and they were like, oh, that's a good question, you know? And they all gave me their interpretations and their definitions of what bliss was. And then the conversation continued and we kept going. But what I witnessed was that I planted a seed in each of them that day. I gave them this language that they did not have prior. And a couple days later, I was in my freshly remodeled home with my husband and kid, and we were fixing the couch and just doing some ordinary, mundane task. We had to put these clips on our couch. It was something super simple, but we did it. And, you know, it was Orly and Orlando and me, and we were just kind of like messing with the couch and moving it up. And we had to like together work as a team to get the couch up and then bring the couch down and do the things. And finally, we laid the couch to rest and the couch looked great. It looked better than it started. And we had accomplished this thing together of putting these clips on the couch. And my husband looked at me. He was like, oh my God, I feel bliss right now. It's super random, but I feel it. I feel bliss from fixing this couch. And I was like, oh my Lord, he found it because he knew how to identify it because he had recently named it. And now he can claim it. I was like, this is important. Fast forward, my little Ryan is the one that has connected the most with the emotion of bliss. And every once in a while, I'll find a note on my desk that says, Mom, I just experienced a spark of bliss for you. I love you. Or a note on my phone. Mom, I'm feeling bliss for you right now. I love you so much. You're the best mom ever. Of course. Your son sends you a note like that, and what else will you experience in your life other than bliss, right? So his connecting to the language sparks bliss in me, and it has enhanced our relationship. It's made it so special and so meaningful because whenever we feel that little jolt of joy for each other, that little rush of emotion for each other, we identify it and name it as a blissful moment. So that is the power of using language, which is the foundation of it all. Use language that elevates your life, that enhances your experience, not that limits it, not that makes it negative and ugly and sacrificial, but rather that turns it into something magical. Which is a perfect segue into the second element of the process, which is romanticizing your life, romanticizing the process. Now, this doesn't always mean joy. Sometimes we have really difficult moments. We have really hard challenges, really painful things. And even in those moments, there are certain elements that are beautiful and blissful. I know that I experienced that personally with my father on his deathbed. I couldn't have been in more pain in my life than to know that my father was leaving me soon, to know that he was dying right before my eyes and that there was nothing I could do about it. And yet, there was these moments, words he said, connections we had, synchronicities we enjoyed. There were little sparks of magic, little connections, little rewards. And those were blissful. They were blissful because they were meaningful, because they made our life count. They made it memorable. They made it matter. And that, I think, is what bliss is all about. It's not about perfection. It's not about just being the happiest person in the world all the time. It's about making it matter. So there's an exercise that I think is such a powerful exercise. And it's getting a piece of paper or two pieces of paper and getting a situation in your life, a circumstance, a time period, a circumstance, an event, something that happened, and gathering the facts of that circumstance or that event or that experience you had. And then writing it in the light of you being a victim, all the pain, all that you suffered, all that went wrong on one piece of paper. And then on the other piece of paper, writing it in the most romantic light, with you being the hero, you finding the blessings, you looking for the magic. Same facts. The facts do not change, but how you tell the story did change. So I'm not suggesting that you have to change anything about your life in order to romanticize it. What I am suggesting is that you start paying attention to how you're telling the story. What story are you telling? Are you the victim or the hero? Is it mundane and mediocre or romantic and extraordinary? Could you rewrite the story just a little bit? And if you did, how would that make you feel? Could it spark a little bit of bliss in your experience? The third foundation of a blissful life is seeking growth. William Burroughs said once, when you stop growing, you start dying. And so many people stop growing way too early in their life. Life becomes about optimizing comfort, about being safe, avoiding risk, just living the day in and the day out. We stop permitting ourselves to change. We start being afraid of making a mistake. We feel like we can't go back to the drawing board, like we can't start over. We stop challenging ourselves. And this happens to different people at different stages. And, you know, sometimes you can get away with it. Other times the universe forces a change on you. And I often think that when the universe forces a change on you is for your well-being and for your benefit, because even if it's hard and even if it's painful, oftentimes it's an opportunity for growth. And in that growth, we find our bliss again. You know, yesterday I had a conversation with a client of mine, and this is a man who was divorced recently and has been really, really going through a very difficult time accepting that divorce. It's just been very painful for him. And it's brought a lot of issues to the surface. You know, I said recently, in when I was talking about the cracks in the last episode, the cracks in the on the phone and the water getting in the cracks, that we often have a surface problem and we blame the surface problem for how we're feeling, but it's rarely the surface problem that causes the damage. It's what's underlying the surface problem. It's like the cracks that allowed that surface problem to cause damage. That's what we need to look at. So this guy has been looking at the cracks. He's been experiencing the pain from finding all the cracks in his life. And yesterday he had to have a very difficult conversation with his wife, ex-wife. But he did it. He, you know, I coached him. He spoke to another friend of his who also helped him out. He coached himself, he prayed, he got himself together, and he was able to have this difficult conversation. And when he was done, he called me and he said, I feel like I've grown more today as a man than I have ever grown in my entire life. Because he overcame a big challenge that was causing him a lot of fear and a lot of grief and a lot of anxiety and a lot of regret and all these other things. And he said, I've grown so much today. And I said, well, how do you feel? And he said, I swear I have the same adrenaline rush as when I get off stage, because this person is a performer and he is on stage. And you know, when you're on stage and you have an audience and you're speaking in front of a lot of people, they celebrate you and there's like this adrenaline rush and you come out of there and you feel like $1 million, you're high on life. And he compared this very difficult experience that he owned up to and was able to tackle and rise up to the challenge and tackle it head on. He experienced the same adrenaline as if he was coming off of stage from doing something he loves. Same experience. That is a spark of bliss. And you wouldn't think that a spark of bliss would rise from a painful situation, but it's not the painful situation that caused the bliss. It was the growth. In that moment, he reclaimed his power. He found himself again. He grew as a human being. When we allow ourselves to drop our ego, put our pride aside, be vulnerable, when we rise, when we do the hard things, when we tackle things head on, when we face that fear that we had, when we're not afraid of making a mistake or being a beginner or looking like an amateur or making a fool out of ourselves, we stretch ourselves and we grow. And in that growth lies the path to bliss. And the fourth and last foundation of a blissful life, as at least for today's episode, is understanding your purpose. Recently, I was speaking with another one of my clients, and this client of mine is also a man who I so enjoy conversing with. He's retired in the third chapter of his life. He's done big things, has had a lot of success, a lot of financial success, lots of kids and family and traveled the world. He's done amazing things. And now he has come to me to learn how to find bliss in the simple things. Now that he's not, you know, chasing those big, big milestone goals that he did before, now he's reframing his perspective. He's finding new sparks of bliss. He's finding new ways to enjoy life and actually going backwards, going from the big things to the small things. And I've been helping him with that. So we're in the middle of a coaching session and we get into a conversation about getting out of bed when you're comfy in your covers. I don't remember what sparked that conversation, but something prompted us to talk about that. And I pulled up the quote by Marcus Aurelius that's found in his book Meditations. And the quote says, "At dawn, when you have trouble getting out of bed, tell yourself, I have to go to work as a human being. What do I have to complain of if I'm going to do what I was born for, the things I was brought into this world to do? Or is this what I was created for, to huddle under the blankets and stay warm? So you were born to feel nice instead of doing things and experiencing them? Don't you see the plants, the birds, the ants and spiders and bees going about their individual tasks, putting the world in order as best they can? and you're not willing to do your job as a human being, why aren't you running to do what your nature demands? You don't love yourself enough, or you'd love your nature too and what it demands of you. So I read this to him, and we started to explore this passage and what it means, what is the purpose of it. And the conclusion that we came to was that we must understand that our purpose is to be human. Our purpose is to exist. Now, I'm very intrigued by this concept because I, in the line of work that I do, I often find people looking for their purpose, trying to find their purpose, feeling like they're not fulfilling their purpose in their career or at work or in their daily life. And this can be so disheartening when you feel like you're aimlessly roaming around life and you have no purpose. It's one of the worst things that you could feel as a human being. But to me, what Marcus Aurelius so beautifully pointed out, and I also found the same message resonating in the book Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, is that when you understand that your purpose is to be human, to exist, that your birth was a miracle, then you start to understand that your job is not to find your purpose. You are here on purpose, and your job is to live purposefully. And you know when you see this clear as day? In when you witness a person who loses everything but their will to live. To reiterate the book, A Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl talks about being a Holocaust survivor, being in a Nazi concentration camp, having lost everything. His whole family had been killed, all his money taken away from him, everything stripped from him, his clothes, food, everything. And yet he still did not lose his desire to survive. And like that, there are many examples. Sometimes you think about somebody who's been in an accident and lost their children in the accident, or their whole family dies in an accident. And your thought is, I could never survive that. I would lose my will to live. I would just shoot myself and die with them. And I know we all believe that because we can't imagine what that kind of suffering could look like. But yet, when put to the test, people survive. They somehow preserve that will to live. It's inexplicable. And to me, the only explanation is that to live is our only true purpose. Everything else is a tool. Your talents, your gifts, your desires, your circumstances, your challenges, these are all tools that allow you to experience this human life in a unique and exciting way. That's it. Whatever career you chose or path you took, whether you're married or you're single, whether you have kids or you don't, it's all about the experience. Are you serving humanity? Are you contributing to humanity? Are you connecting to others and to your to yourself and to your highest version of yourself? Are you witnessing the magic in your life? Are you truly living? And if you are, then you are fulfilling your purpose and you are on the path to bliss. Now, there is a difference between setting up a foundation for a blissful life and actually experiencing the sparks of bliss. Bliss is like a shooting star. It appears suddenly, it sparks awe, it reminds you of something bigger than yourself. It transcends time and space. It's gratifying and fulfilling and probably causes butterflies in your stomach. It's fleeting. It's not something you can fake. It's not even something you can force or something you can guarantee. But it is always within you. And when you are on the path, when you are living a life in which you are using dynamic and exciting language, romanticizing your process and your journey, seeking growth and shifting your perspective so that you remember you are here on purpose instead of trying to find your purpose. This is what clears the skies so that you can open your eyes wide enough and see the shooting star that we call a spark of bliss, so that you're not distracted by the chaos and the noise and the traffic and the overwhelm of daily life. And you can still catch the moment whenever it shows up for you. So that's all I've got for you today. I hope this is a deep reflection for you on this sacred Sunday, and I will see you next week. That's it for today's episode. Thanks so much for being here. I am deeply, deeply grateful for this time to connect. If you're loving this podcast, I'd love if you could support me by subscribing, rating, and/or leaving a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Those reviews help us so, so much. And if you know of someone who could really use a voice like mine in their head, please share this with them and let them know how much you care about their bliss. Now, if you are feeling called to dig deeper and really work on elevating your mindset, wellness, and your relationships to create a healthier, happier, and more meaningful life, then I invite you to schedule a 60-minute complimentary consultation with me. Let's have a meaningful conversation and see if working together is in our future. You can find the link to the calendar of consults right there in my show notes, but you can also connect with me on my website, carolinedeposada.com, or just send me a DM on Instagram, at carolinedeposada. Like my friend always says, the project is big and you're a part of it. So thanks for being here.